the temperance movement in North Carolina. Welcome to the Documenting the American South Highlights podcast. Doc South is a digital publishing initiative sponsored by the University Library at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. On January 16, 1919, the 18th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which banned, quote, the manufacture, sale, or transportation of intoxicating liquor, end quote, was ratified. Moral, medical, emotional, and financial considerations have long prompted activists in North Carolina to attempt to limit the availability of alcohol and to minister to its victims. This month, Documenting the American South considers the temperance movement in North Carolina. Proponents for the state's temperance movement have often cited both statistical and anecdotal evidence for the degrading influence of alcohol and its traumatic effects on individuals and families. Though it was not the first of its kind, in 1808, Billy Clark and Reverend Lebbeus Armstrong founded the Temperance Society of Moreau in Northumberland, New York. North Carolina's temperance movement was well underway as early as 1832. In that year, Washington, North Carolina resident and physician William A. Shaw delivered a series of lectures to the Washington Temperance Society in which he lambasted intemperance as, quote, a source of disease and a national evil, noting that consumption of alcohol, quote, fills prisons with dishonest, weak, and wicked criminals, fills almshouses with paupers, makes tens of thousands of men poor and wretched, and leaves their widows indigent and destitute, and throws on the charity of this cold world great numbers of helpless poor orphans. End quote. Concerns over the uses and abuses of alcohol were mounting in 1840, when a circular, apparently mailed to the parents of UNC undergraduates from University President David L. Swain, concluded that the, quote, justice, morality, and good breeding, end quote, of UNC students had been compromised by parties involving wine and ardent spirits. One particularly wild festival in the woods, which Swain called a senior or a freshman treat, resulted in a series of disorders, including the battering of classroom doors and other, quote, gross indignities. Swain's circular concludes with a terse form letter, apparently to be filled out by faculty advisors, which indicates that, quote, your son, blank space, has been absent from prayers, blank space, from recitation, blank space, times, and from attendance on divine worship, blank space, times, end quote. Similarly, in 1854, a group calling itself the Friends of Temperance of Guilford County proposed a series of resolutions that classified, quote, the use of intoxicating drinks as a horrible evil, end quote, warning legislators that the issue of temperance, quote, will be one of the first considerations in the bestowal of our suffrages, end quote. The pamphlet proposed legislation to prevent counties from granting licenses to sell liquor. One of the most outspoken advocates for the movement to ban the sale of alcohol in North Carolina was Thomas Jordan Jarvis, who served as governor from 1879 to 1884, and whose ardent support of prohibition helped the measure pass overwhelmingly, 62% to 38%, in May 1908. This referendum made North Carolina the first southern state to prohibit the production and sale of alcoholic beverages. In a 1908 pamphlet titled Schools versus Saloons, Jarvis announced that the schoolroom, quote, makes men, sends them to the legislature, and carries light and knowledge into the home and community, while the barroom destroys them, fills the jails and penitentiaries with criminals and murderers, and sends them to the scaffold in hell, end quote. Jarvis appealed to the shared identity of North Carolinians, arguing that the, quote, railroad, telegraph, and the telephone have annihilated space and time, and made us one people in all our aspirations, plans, and purposes to become a great people in a great state, end quote. Therefore, he concluded, the state as a whole would be best served if all counties prohibited alcohol. In a more focused letter addressed to the men of his own Pitt County, Governor Jarvis wrote that he felt confident that, quote, a large majority of the people of North Carolina are going to vote against the manufacture and sale of intoxicating liquor, end quote. This measure was crucially necessary, Jarvis explained, because alcohol, and the money spent to purchase it, creates lawlessness, makes criminals, wrecks homes, and brings trouble to innocent women and children. However, as a true politician, Jarvis hoped that Pitt County would vote strongly in favor of prohibition, because, quote, he earnestly desired to see it become the county in eastern North Carolina, end quote. Therefore, a local vote in favor of prohibition to Jarvis was also a demonstration of the elevated status of his home county. The measure did pass, and North Carolina was won by the dries for a time. State laws in North Carolina and elsewhere helped usher in the era of federal prohibition. On January 16, 1919, the 18th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which banned alcohol, was ratified. But the days of prohibition, both nationally and statewide, were numbered, and in the 1930s, the political winds began to change. In a 1934 address to the Convention of the United Dry Forces in Greensboro, North Carolina, Francis Renfro Doak triumphantly announced that efforts to repeal the 18th Amendment had failed in North Carolina because, quote, "there are and have been for 25 years more dries than wets in the state," end quote. Doak's address goes on to describe the grassroots efforts to educate and organize so-called dry forces against the proponents of repeal. Nevertheless, the efforts of Doak and her colleagues had already been defeated on a national level. The 21st Amendment, which repealed the 18th Amendment, was ratified in December 1933, and thus prohibition was erased from federal law. After the federal government returned control of alcoholic beverages to the states, North Carolina relinquished control to its counties. The 1937 Alcoholic Beverage Control Bill, quote, "allowed voters in each county to determine whether or not spirituous liquor should be sold at retail," end quote, and established a commission to oversee state-regulated ABC stores. However, opponents of the alcohol industry did not immediately accept their defeat. A 1937 document prepared by the United Dry Forces of North Carolina tabulated the crimes and abuses observed in specific counties after ABC stores opened across the state. The document denied the claim of the wets that, quote, "liquor stores will reduce drinking and promote temperance," end quote, and offered substantial tables of evidence to the contrary. Though most North Carolinians take for granted their right to purchase and consume alcohol, it is both intriguing and important to realize that these laws resulted from a sustained compromise between contending forces. The history of prohibition and repeal in North Carolina parallels national movements and legislation, revealing a well-organized and enduring movement to outlaw the sale of alcohol. If some North Carolina residents were aptly characterized as Knights of the Rum Cask, others challenged the state's permissive stance toward alcohol, which they viewed as a source of degradation and a cultural vice. For links to the works and collections mentioned, and for other titles of interest, visit this highlight on the web at docsouth.unc.edu/highlights/temperance.html. For the most recent highlight and a link to the highlights archive, visit docsouth.unc.edu and click on the highlights link. Thank you for listening to the Documenting the American South Highlights podcast.